I'm trying to figure out, like, what is it the judges want? Because in the Flash Challenge, the judges were like, we wish you would have gone with the tones of your childhood photo. And then in the Portfolio Challenge, oh, we wish you had your pink hair in it. Come on now.
This is The Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 352 for the week of April 26, 2021. I am quality Samsung product David T. Cole, and I'm here with lens flare Sarah D. Bunting.
Because it's the 70s?
Selfie approver Tara Ariano.
Don't post that.
And obviously Photoshop detail Jessica Leese.
Gotta have the eye dot.
Welcome to Extra Hot Grape for another week. I know we announced in the last episode it would be Brittany Luce this week. Unfortunately, she's not able to join us. We will book her back as soon as we're able. And stepping into her shoes, the very wonderful Jessica Leese. Hello, Jessica.
Hello, Jessica.
Jessica. Hi. Hi. Yay! I'm happy to be here.
Welcome. Woo. We're so happy to have you to talk about, at your request, Exposure on Hulu. If you just read the blurb on, for instance, the Futon Critic, like I did, you might think this is a bog-standard reality competition show for photographers in which eight competitors are put through challenges by a couple of industry experts, and at the end of each episode, one of them gets eliminated. But look into it a little deeper, like Jessica did, you discover it's branded content. The whole thing is made in partnership with Samsung, which is why the photographers aren't shooting with cameras. They're shooting with phones. Only one episode has dropped thus far, 2 days ago, as you're listening to this on Hulu. That is all we've seen. So, I mean, spoilers, but, you know, spoilers for an episode that's already dropped. Let us go around the circle and do the Chen check-in. Jessica, should our listeners watch this show?
No, our listeners should not watch this show.
We will get into why. Sarah.
Based on one episode, no, but I'll explain more.
Dave. I concur. This is a no for me as well. So, Jessica, when you emailed to let me know this is a show you wanted to talk about, you noted there was something dystopian about the branded content aspect of it. And on paper, I agree. But I have to say, when I actually watched it, I didn't think that the Samsung pause men's was that much for more, shall we say, filatery than what we normally see, like,
agree,
on any other reality show when they have a given week's episode sponsor it and they're like, oh, Bic Pens, the most iconic pen brand or whatever the fuck it is. And to be clear, that's not praise of Exposure. It's criticism of every other reality competition show. So was that your impression, Jessica, or did you find it intrusive?
I didn't find it intrusive at all. And I think it's, to your point, we are so desensitized to that from every other reality show ever. And at the same time, I was kind of disappointed not to have it thrown in my face constantly.
Right.
I was waiting for the Chewy's gum of it all to come at me. And no, it was just like, here's a bunch of photographers that have to work with phones. And that's, it looks like an okay phone. It mm-hmm. looks like every other phone ever.
Dave is going to yell about this as well, but because he has a lot to yell about with regard to this show, I'm going to throw it to Sarah first, because the judges do the thing that we used to bitch about when we covered Project Runway together, which is, as we heard in the clip up top, sometimes they want to tell the contestants, we didn't see you in this piece. And sometimes they want to say, you didn't follow the brief and the contestants have no rubric to follow. Was this something that bugged you as much as it bugged us?
That wasn't one of the things that bugged me, weirdly. The judges are new at this, and it's very obvious. This is some, like, Katie Lee Joel shit where it's just very stiff. If they don't stop saying cold hard cash, I don't know what. I mean, I guess the what is that I'll stop watching, which I have already done. So
take that, Exposure.
Yeah, booker. Get off my lawn with your phone. I also did not find the product placement any more intrusive than, say, the awkwardly inserted Top Chef trying to make a go of beef jerky product placement. But they definitely like what was going to be appealing about this to me for a full hour long episode is the processy stuff. Like, how are these photos being, like, how much time do they really have? How many materials were they given? What do they know about the materials that are on hand? How are certain in-phone software tricks being deployed? What are they called? Like, there are references to, like, the ratio of the, you know, heat in your fill that I'm like, well, I basically know what that means and I can fuck around on Photoshop to the extent of any other lit major, but like, explain for civilians what the contestants are doing. Otherwise, yeah, we have no frame of reference. So between that and the judging being volatile,
erratic, yeah.
yeah, then it's really like you're just sort of floating in space with what this is supposed to be assessing. Not to mention, this is definitely one of those competitions where, like, they should all have been told that it was one thing, and then it turns out to just be like a longitudinal study of their personal style. Like, this individual has teal eyebrows. Tell me more about that, since you're not going to tell me anything about phone photography, which I think would be a legitimately interesting processing thing. And I have to wonder how this would have looked if the BBC took charge of it, because they are much better at being like, here's how this thing that you could probably never do and would never try to do can be both interesting and soothing.
All right, Dave.
So that's why it's a no for me. Everything I wanted it to be was, like, not present. And I don't think it's not going to turn it around in that regard.
Okay.
Dave, begin yelling.
Yeah, thank you.
So just to go back to your first question to Jessica, just about, like, how obtrusive the Samsungification of the show seemed, I agree that, like, Samsung, the name, the product, the brand, wasn't plastered beyond what you see on other reality shows. But having Samsung underwrite this show and therefore use Samsung products is sort of akin to, like, having a baking show sponsored by General Mills, and instead of using flour, you have to use ground up Lucky Charms, because and you're not going to get a very good cake. And Samsung doesn't make an SLR, like, you know, a real camera. That's,
yeah,
I'm using air quotes, but you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
interchangeable lenses, all that jazz, which obviously all these people on the show use as their daily driver. Right. These are, for the most part, professional photographers. They largely guarantee you, when they're doing their commercial work, do not use a cell phone unless they are doing a campaign for a cell phone.
Right.
Like that. You know, it's like,
right,
there's this really annoying saying that, you know, the internet photography crowd uses, the best camera is the one you have with you. To which I add, just make sure you have the best camera with you.
Yeah, like an actual one.
Yes.
Well, it's also sort of like the challenge giving away Zunes instead of iPods back in the day. Like, can we be real about what's actually being used in the field? Because I'm not sure. I'm not sure this is the dominant brand, but all right.
The problem is, this is not a photography reality show. It is a internet influencer meme program masquerading as a photography show, because the first episode, there's two challenges. There's, you know, just like Great British Bake Off, there's the little one and then there's the big one. Mm-hmm. And the little one was, do a throwback Thursday reenactment of one of your childhood photos, which is sort of like a technical challenge, I suppose. And then the next one after that was, pick a relatively famous painting and then recreate that. So you have these professional photographers that are all about creating statements with art. And your first episode is two things in which you are just basically mimicking something else.
Yeah.
That's not really a big challenge for a professional photographer. And it's sort of like kind of beneath them as well. You know what I mean? Like, not that that kind of stuff isn't fun or has a place in the world, but if you're going to have a show that is labeled as a photography challenge reality show, and you're basically doing like YouTube and Instagram stuff, you're really confusing what you're about. And I think that came through because, like, one of the judges, they have like two co-hosts that are judges, and they bring in a guest judge each episode. And one of the main hosts with the long hair, that dude is like a YouTube guy. And then the lady is like a photographer from LA that kind of runs a photographer's association there. And so right there off the bat, you got one person doesn't know a lot about photography, and you have this other person that does. And then the guest judge was like some YouTube celebrity.
It's Tyler Oakley. Dave doesn't know.
I know
who he
Tyler.
Is. He's a YouTuber.
He was on The Amazing Race, guys.
Okay. Twice. So for me, this was basically kind of like images for the internet and not necessarily photography.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but then make that the rubric.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Explain
exactly.
Your rubric.
Yeah.
Like bring in all the photographers and say, we're going to do a reality show about photography and we're going to make the best photos. And here's your tool. And then you roll out the cameras and everybody's like, what? It's the camera. And I think this model works. The idea of having like one host who's a host and doesn't know what he's doing. And then one judge who's kind of the expert in the field. I kept wanting it to be. And this is a show that I know the three of you do not watch. I've even thought about pitching it to the Canon, and I know you're going to reject it. But my favorite competition reality show in this arena is Ink Master.
Right.
And you have a Dave Navarro, and you have the two like famous tattoo artists. And then every time they're testing a different aspect of it, and then they go in and they say, composition is how the different aspects of your tattoo line up, or contrast is how the colors interplay with each other. And we didn't get that this week. It was just like make a meme. And
right.
I think there's room for being like exposure is the amount of light on your photo and flat light is this. And I think you could do a really great show where everybody learns a lot, but they purposely tried to make you learn nothing.
Yeah.
You didn't even learn about the phone.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, the Beeb does this. Like, I know what throwing off the hump is. I have chuckled at it many times now watching Grey Pottery Throwdown. But it's like, you know, someone comes in, the host who doesn't really know anything, comes in and does the VO. That's like, you probably don't know this either, or you'd be on the show. Here's what this is.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
I suspect this show started off as something more akin to what I imagined it could have been, which is professional photographers doing photography, and then they get judged by other more seasoned professionals sort of thing. But then at some point somebody said, but how do we get the kids in here? And then it turned into this more meme-y attack vector show. You know, it's not quite one, not quite the other. And they needed to make up their mind. But I don't know if there's like a TV show in that other one, in the more strict one. Like there certainly is a lot of take a photo, give a critique, explain how it was made stuff on the internet. I don't know how well that I would watch it.
Because
I'm interested in that stuff. And certainly I would love to hear the professionals they have on this show explain what they're doing with the lights as they move them around. You're moving them closer because you want to redefine the sharpness of the shadows and all this sort of stuff that you do with light. But they don't. And therefore, at the end, it's just sort of like, do you like this photo or not? And not like why it doesn't work or why it works. There's more process and consideration and explanation in an episode of The Joy of Painting than there is in Exposure. And it's so much
there
more
totally
technical
is.
In
yeah.
Exposure. And you feel like there should have been double, triple the amount of the science of photography and how you play with light, but there isn't.
Yeah.
And it's just ultimately a frustrating omission.
Well, and if you're going to harp on the I dot every fucking time, explain why that's important to you from a composition standpoint.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even draw a stick figure. You got to walk me through this shit. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing about, like, starting with two essentially selfie challenges is that it puts the photographers on the back foot because it means even if you're trying to challenge them on, like, showing off what they know how to do about lighting, you're handicapping them by making them, like, have to, like, keep running back and forth because they're trying to light themselves.
And every single one of them almost was like, I don't do selfies. This is annoying.
They like, hated it. As soon as they were like, it's Throwback
that
Thursday.
Challenge.
And they all just made a face. It's like, oh, great.
And
like,
the second challenge, well, both of them, but even more so the second challenge was about like finding unusual materials to make yourself look like these paintings.
Yes.
And like, and if you're a professional photographer and you know you have a like a set dressing to do or, you know, costuming and makeup to do, that's part of the planning process. And there's something not genuine about these sort of like throw them into the deep end sort of challenges that are, you know, a staple of reality shows, but it works in some instances and is very artificial in others. And this is the one where it's very artificial. See also like Face Off when they would do it, like create a whole movie and you have 3 minutes, go. Like that was like those bother me, because I would rather see the product after they get to spend the 3 days they need to make a really good monster or, you know, whatever they're going to do on this show, but they didn't. And it's, yeah.
Well, in this, they just weren't transparent about the fact that, like, they have an entire warehouse room of unconventional materials, so to say, to recreate these paintings. Like, and also that I think they were probably told about it in advance, but we aren't told that. And it's like, if we have no idea what everybody else knows, what are the stakes? Who cares? Mm-hmm. I'm learning nothing about anything.
Yeah.
Except that Cole Walliser has good hair that's going to, you know, be a runner the whole season.
It was not as funny as they thought.
No.
But yeah, no. I mean, in terms of the conventional materials, it was like, it wasn't clear to me whether that was also an aspect that they were getting judged on. Because a lot of the times it was like, it seems like this feather is representing a feather. And then, you know, Chris comes out with like this whole ruff he made with a toilet seat. And they were like, yeah, it doesn't look that good. It's like, yeah, because he made it with like fucking paper and a toilet seat and bath buffs.
Like, and then someone's like, well, you should have left it as a toilet seat. Like, no one should ever do that. It's the shitter. Yeah. Shut up. I guess I actually did hate the show. Oops.
Yeah, well, if you give me a list of shows and you tell me to pick one, I'm going to pick the one that's going to make everybody the most angry.
Totally. Yes.
Well done.
Hey. Thank you.
By the way, I explained this show to my friend Imbal, who is the person that taught me photography back in Manhattan.
Oh, you mean your momtographer friend? We didn't even get
into that.
She was
so mad about that, by the way. Gross. I said to her, you might like it because there's momtographers and you're a mom and a photographer. Therefore, you're a momtographer. She said, fuck off.
Yeah, I was going to say, and you're alive?
I gave her like the bullet point. That doesn't sound so bad. And then like each detail of the show I added, she got, oh, I'm going to watch this so I can get mad at this. And then the last thing was like, you know, you can do a lot. And I said, oh, by the way, they're using cell phones. She's like, I'm out. Anyways, around the dial. Tara, you're first.
So the Married at First Sight universe has added a new star. There are a lot of Married at First Sight titles in the franchise that you might not know about because I don't watch them all, which is why I don't talk about them, like Couples Cam and whatever else. There's the Australia spinoff that I started to watch and then I bailed on. But this last week, they launched Married at First Sight, Unmatchables. And the premise of this is, according to them...
Unmatchable.
Yeah.
They're alive, damn it.
Amazing.
Like 80,000 people have applied to be on the show. And every season they pick, I mean, now it's up to 10, which is too much in my opinion. But anyway, so like tons of people don't get picked. And they're like, sometimes they barely make the cut, and sometimes they had no shot. And the ones that have no shot are the ones the show is about. So it's basically like a boot camp for people who are bad at dating and are weird. So
how do you pitch this to someone to get them to go on the show?
I think they may have like made them think they did get picked, and then they're like, oh, by the way, you're not getting matched for marriage. Here's what we're actually doing, and then hope that they just sign the release. It's hard to tell. But anyway, every episode they work with two of these people who were not matched. And the experts, Dr. Viviana and Pastor Cal, work with them and they put them through exercises. So in the first episode, we meet Ashley. Dave, please play the clip that I provided you.
My farts stink.
One of her issues is she farts all the time. I'm not joking. Like, that's seriously. She, like, walks into frame. It's like that music that you heard, that stock music. She, like, walks in the frame and audibly farts.
We've lost Dave, just so everyone knows.
So
It's maybe a new record.
This is in her like video she made of herself to send to Married at First Sight, where she's like, I fart all the time. Find me a husband. So it's like, I mean, I admire the confidence.
We met on Rumble.
She has other issues on top of that, which are she's really close to her roommate and best friend, Nikisha, like to the exclusion of any possible male suitors, and also is maybe like possibly super not into sex, but it's hard to tell. And then we meet the other person is a guy named Xavius, Dave's dad. His issues are he's compulsive about routine. He's obsessive about scent, to like he will approach strange women to ask what perfume they're wearing. And they say his third thing is that he's more confident around dead people because he's like a mortuary assistant. But this doesn't really come up in the episode. His real thing is the third issue is that he doesn't want to date women who are like plus sized. And so they do various training exercises with them to try and, like, cure their issues. They take Ashley to a sex shop. Dr. Vivian is like, try on this lingerie. And she's like, I'll try on this robe. Like, she goes into a dressing room to put it on over her clothes. Like, maybe issues beyond what they can deal with on Married at First Sight, Unmatchables. They send her on a date initially, and then she thinks it's the real blind date, but it's like a fake blind date. And they know that she's going to bring her roommate, which she does. Like, the roommate is sitting at the table behind her.
Wow.
Okay.
So then Pastor Cal is like, well, if you want Nikisha to be here, I'm going to tie your legs together, see how that goes. So it's not great. Anyway, the blind date ends up being between the two of them. Like, they go on the date together, and she farts on the date! Like, she sits down at the bar and, like, just farts almost immediately, audibly, and she's like, that was me. But then they seem like they get along, and so, I don't know. Maybe that's the end game of this. So, Dr. Vivian and Pastor Cal seem better able to do short-term results-focused therapy on these weirdos than they are at making matches on the main show. And yes, it's time for me to check back in on Married at First Sight. Wow. Because this season is a train wreck! Watching this season, it's like, this is for sure the worst couple, whichever couple is on screen, and then they move to the next couple, and you're like, oh no, this is the worst couple, because they're all so bad. So last time I talked about the show, I told you about Chris and Paige, the guy who got another lady pregnant and then had her on to talk to his wife and then was like, and I'm going to go back to her. And this new lady was like, no, you're not. So after that episode, he talked Paige into trying again, or else the producers were like, look, we'll give you $1,000 if you just stay on the show. And so she did. It's not clear. But then he still never moved into their show-provided housing. Eventually, then one of the times he saw Paige, he was like, oh, by the way, I bought Mercedes a new car. And she's like, okay, she needs a car. She's going to have a baby. Like, you know, you got her like a Kia Spectra or something. He's like, oh, no, I bought her a Mercedes-Benz. And Paige was like, that'll do. And now they're getting divorced. And they had a post-marriage collapse check-in with Pastor Cal, which Chris was almost an hour late for Sarah. So, you know, on top of all the other reasons that he's terrible, that one.
Yeah, tardy. Nope.
So from here, I'll talk about the other couples in descending success of their marriage from least terrible to most terrible, starting with Brianna and Vincent. They mostly get along. One of their issues is that she likes to get up really early and he doesn't, and she's a bitch about it. Like, let a man sleep in. Who cares? He also really wants to have a baby, like, now, and she is concerned about that because she has high blood pressure and is worried that, like, she could die.
It'll just shoot out.
No, she's worried about her health.
Oh.
That's how that works, Dave.
And so they...
I'm not a doctor. I hear high pressure, and I just imagine this like a baby cannon.
She had one of the experts come to the house so that she could explain, like, do you understand my issues around this? And, like, why, you know, I think maybe we could, like, talk about adoption. And he's like, your health, you could die. All right, I still really want to have my own biological children, though. It's like, fuck off. His other issue is that he doesn't want to do anything that's going to make him look dumb, like, I don't know, on camera or just in life. Like, she wanted to go and do a dance lesson, and he was just bailed on it because he wasn't getting it right away. And then, like, in the latest episode, they all go on a couple's retreat to Hilton Head Island, and she books them horseback riding, and he's, like, super paranoid about it because he's never done it. And he's, like, thinks he's going to look dumb on the horse, which he does. But she's super empathetic about his fear of this horse, way more so than he is about her fear of dying in pregnancy or childbirth, so... Go to hell, Vincent. Moving on.
Also, and, you're on this show. I think the looking stupid horse, as it were, is way out of the barn. And
exactly. Yes.
Yeah. In another time zone, but cool. Whatever.
Yes.
Fragile.
Moving on. Clara and Ryan. He will not have sex with her. He will, however, we have learned, let her do stuff to him. Hand jobs? We don't know. Oh. Unclear. But then he also, whatever she's doing to him, he's not doing back to her because he doesn't feel comfortable around sex unless he's in love. But he's also said he's never been in love. So, like, there's wild speculation among fans of the show of, like, is he a virgin? Like, what is his deal? He's also from, like, super religious family. So it's like maybe he's gay and like so deeply closeted, including to himself. And so Clara is getting like more and more and more frustrated, like sexually and in general about this. And like every time the experts come over to check in on them, she's like, I don't know why he is holding out on me. And so she'll get more upset and like we'll be having these conversations and crying. And he'll just like be looking at her with like this creepy smile like he thinks everything's fine. He's weird. I don't know what his deal is, and I don't know if we're going to find out.
It's Andrew Shue. Okay.
I was going to say it's Tom Cruise.
Wow. Something. He's some kind of, he's right in the middle of those two. Moving on. Wow. Jacob and Haley seem like, I don't know why they're still together because they hate each other. he is real weird. He's the one who only eats steak. He also, they went to the batting cage and he wore like dress shoes. And she was like, why wouldn't you wear tennis shoes? He's like, I just don't like them. Like, you're in a batting cage. Like, just wear runners. What is your problem? So they, one of their big fights is he gave her this bracelet as like a day of the wedding gift. And she didn't wear it because she thought it was a necklace. She didn't take it out of it. And she was wearing like a halter necked wedding gown. So that was already a thing where he was like, you're not wearing it. She was like, oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was a necklace and it didn't go with what I'm wearing. She gave it to her mother to like put in the car so it didn't get lost. And then her mother lives in Alabama. They're all in Georgia. And apparently he's brought this up, A, that she didn't bring it back home with them, B, that it cost $800 like 70 times since the wedding. Like, he's really upset about it. And yet none of those times did she think like, maybe I should just get my mother to ship this to me because it's obviously like a thing with him because she does not like him. Like, she doesn't care. So for this getaway at Hilton Head Island, it's a 5-hour drive. They did it separately. Like, they're not sleeping in the same room. They're living in this apartment. But they were both like, let's not drive together because we can't stand each other.
Wow.
Sounds like maybe this guy who only eats steak should hook up with the lady from the other show that farts all the time, because I feel like they're going to have a lot in common.
Perhaps. Perhaps. Oh, speaking of his diet, he gets there first. She shows up. He's eating. And she's like, I told you I was going to make dinner for everyone the first night. And he was like, oh, I didn't know when you were going to get here. And she's like, okay, what did you make? And he's like, oh, it's eggs. And she's like, how many eggs is that? He made himself 8 fried eggs. Oh, my God. Like, he's a freak. So everyone else gets there. They have a huge fight at dinner, like in front of everyone at the dinner table. Then later they play a game and the teams, they're like playing, you know, like how, who knows each other best. And he names their team and he names them Team Harambe in the year 2021, like the gorilla who died a decade ago, like the internet meme. Like, he's so corny as well. And then he flees in the early morning hours on the last day. Like, he gets up when it's still dark out and fucks off. Like, she gets up and is like, where is he? Doesn't leave a note. Like, no one knows where he is. So that's how they're doing.
Trying
they're
to
not
find
the worst
chicken.
Couple, guys.
Oh, God.
Finally, Eric and Virginia. They were always going to have a problem because she likes a tipple and has a lot of friends, and they like to, like, go to electronic music festivals and, like, sleep at each other's houses when they get wasted and stuff. She has a lot of guy friends, and she's like, they're like basically like my gay friends. And he's like, are they gay? And she's like, no. So it's like, okay. So also she has a dog, so I don't know how that works. Like, is the dog just peeing everywhere while she's sleeping at other people's houses? Not my business. So her, the whole thing with that is like, we can define marriage to be whatever we want it to be. And he's like, okay, but I kind of don't want you to sleep at other guys' houses all the time. But if, on the other hand, he's also a pilot, so he would, like, be gone constantly. So she's, you know, her thing is like, I don't know why I need to be anywhere if you're not here. Like, what do you care? Which also kind of fair. However, she has said, like, when they're at this retreat, she's like, I've figured out that you can love someone but not like them all the time, which is, like, true, but not something you should say 5 weeks into your marriage.
Like, yeah, maybe not.
At that point, like... She says it multiple times in this episode, like, cut the ripcord. And they just fight all the time, including in the car. They fight about how much they fight. And he's like, if we fight again, it's not going to be my fault. And then she's like, I hate it when you say that. So they fight about that. He when he gets angry, he gets, like, so cold. There's already been one incident where she's been, like, clearly fearful of him and, like, gone to the producers, like, sobbing and being like, I don't know if I want to stay here tonight. Like, then... There's a whole thing with his herd. She has this dog and he's like, we're going to need to train your dog. And she's like, well, it's not your business. It's not your dog. And he's like, well, it's half my dog now. And she's like, no, it's not. But then they're talking about where they're going to live after decision day. And she has cats and he's allergic to cats. And she's like, well, the cats sleep in my bed with me. So, you know, I don't know, take a drug, I guess. And he's like, I can't sleep in a bed with cats. She's like, I don't want to take his side, but, like, fair? You either can sleep with this guy or sleep with the cats. Like, those are your choices. I'm sorry. And they also fight in front of everyone. So, like, zero good couples this season. Kind of remarkable. Married at First Sight. Chef's kiss. Best show. So, I reviewed Married at First Sight Unmatchables at Primetimer. You can find that link in the show notes. And I was also... on the Slash Film Cast this week, talking about Mortal Kombat. I will link that in the show notes as well.
Jessica, what have you been watching lately?
Well, I try to keep my spheres of, like, what I'm watching that I have to talk about on a podcast and what I'm watching for myself very, very separate, to the point where I don't even want there to be a podcast about whatever I'm watching. And this has led to some kind of deep dives into, like...
We need to get a new guest.
In like page 5 of the Netflix recommendations. And so This is how I stumbled upon the Australian TV series Offspring. And it is basically, it's like if Grey's Anatomy and Modern Family were the same show and then David E. Kelly was producing it. Ooh. So it's kind of zingy. Wow. And the family all, like, they all hate each other and destroy each other, like, every season, and then they have to forgive each other and come back together. And it's surprisingly great. And it's kind of one of those shows you can put on while you're doing the laundry and just dip in and out of, and really kind of right in the sweet spot of things that I don't have to think too hard about, but are entertaining. It's extraordinarily well acted. Like, the first season, there's an arc between where the main character is in love with her coworker and he's in love with her. And they just, like, they have amazing chemistry and you keep wanting them to get together. And it's kind of shocking by the end of the season when, spoiler alert, they don't. And I want to recommend it to everybody, but it's also like, I don't want anybody else to watch it. It's kind of my thing. You ever feel that proprietary sense over your shows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm the only one that knows its secrets.
Yes. I was kind of that way over Being Erica, which I finished up, which is the most Canadian series that's ever been produced. And I thought, well, I'll just go around the Commonwealth with my next pick. And,
fair enough.
Yeah. And then for my actual things I do talk about on podcasts, I cover a veritable panoply of shows for Rob Has a Podcast and Post Show Recaps, which is like the non-reality sister podcast network of Rob Has a Podcast. And last year I covered like 9 different shows. It was too much. This year we're doing the Walking Dead universe. I'm covering currently Fear the Walking Dead with my co-host Brandon Chappelle. And we are having a great time with that. And I just wrapped up a series on CBS called Tough as Nails, which only caught our interest because it was created and produced by Phil Kogan, your friend and mine of The Amazing Race. Mm-hmm. And last summer, we did one episode. Our podcast dad, Rob Sestrino, was like, we're going to watch one episode of this. There's nothing else on. I'm kind of bored. Let's just do one episode and see how it goes. So we watch one episode of this and we cover it. And you're like, yeah, this is fine. This is okay. It's a good reality show for the summer. So a few days later, he gets an email in his inbox from Phil Kogan. And Phil is like, hey, I like your podcast. Can I be on it? And then he just, and Rob said, okay, Phil's going to be on the podcast with us next week. Phil comes on. He is like way weirder and more awesome than you would ever expect him to be.
He is kind of a loon. I've met him a couple of times and he is like, they're like wellsprings of weird, but it, like in a good way. Like he's wearing a single puka shell and you're like, okay, like, I don't know.
Yeah. He is like, he's everything you want him to be and more. And so we got to do a podcast with Phil and then he just kept showing up every week.
Amazing.
And then he's like, okay, you guys are doing season two, right? I'm going to show up. And so he talks about the process, like how he puts the show together. And he's really passionate about the content. And I don't know that I would have kept watching the show, but now I'm really invested because I feel like I know so much about it. And because we get to hang out with Phil, it was really the best thing that happened in 2020 for me. So
now I'm picturing him just showing up to this Zoom room, like even when the show was not on and you guys are not there. He has like an ocelot under one arm and a dub pie in the other. And he's like, guys,
that's the show Andy talked about too. Now. He loved that. He loved it. So we should probably check it out.
Yeah.
I'm kind of picturing him at Jessica's window right now, just waving. Hi.
Well, he started
right now.
He started this thing while during last season's coverage where he wouldn't come in at the beginning of the podcast. He'd just sort of show up in the middle and we didn't know if he was coming or when he was coming.
Power move.
Yeah, it's a real power move. And then
big Phil energy.
Yeah. He'd leave before the end of the podcast and he'd make the joke like he said the production team wanted to hear what we actually thought and not what we were saying while he was in the room. And it was it was entertaining to say the least.
It was great. That's great. Yeah. Sarah D. Bunting.
So, Top Chef Portland. Over and above how nice it is to have, quote, the usual reality fare still happening. A couple of things I'm enjoying about this season of Top Chef more than I have liked them in the past. Padma, our host, seems less... I don't know. I've been in the minority about this, but as lovely as she is to behold and as knowledgeable as she is and has grown over the seasons, I have found her attitude more stank than I want at times. Some seasons it's not so bad. Other seasons she's just like a dick and a half, like a mean girl, and it's not enjoyable for me. There is none of that in the Portland season. She still makes some piquant comments, don't get me wrong, but she doesn't seem like bitchily and disproportionately offended at bad food. And she's way more flexible with the weirdo contestants. And I don't know if it's from doing Taste the Nation, which I didn't watch, mainly because I was finding her a little off-putting in the ways I've mentioned, but I may check it out now. Or if it's just one of those like post-pandemic things where she just decided life's too short to be a rag. I don't know. She actually seems like she's on the chef test inside in a way she didn't before. And in my opinion, that is a big plus. Second, this is hard to describe, but there's a much better sense on the part of the production that you know how the only thing the SAT really tells you is how good the testee is at taking the SAT? The production seems to understand that the only thing Top Chef challenges necessarily tell you is how good a chef is at those challenges and not necessarily as a chef overall. And the show seems to be like semi-secretly, but not secretly supportive of the chefs who don't thrive in this environment. The most recent boot just really seemed like this milieu was not for her. Between the time constraints and the twists, some chefs are creative and can adapt and hit Top Chef curveballs, but they're not all good at that. And the production creating and then foregrounding Last Chance Kitchen in recent seasons has, I think, been a really smart way to communicate the idea that, look, some, quote, food creatives can thrive in these contrived circumstances, but not all of them.
And let's make sure the control freaks with the graph paper crazy walls in the kitchen get equal time and a chance to show off their stuff, which is what is happening in Last Chance Kitchen. Also, it is kind of an un-Bravo evolution towards, like, away from interpersonal drama and towards the inherent drama of whatever line of work is being focused on, but I am into it. So Top Chef Portland, thumbs up. Also, I think they may have changed out some camera operators because the food had been looking kind of disgusting the last couple of seasons, and it is being shot much more lovingly recently, to the point where I was like, that is a beef stew. I think there's a raisin. I still want to try it. It looks delicious. So that's how good that is. Beef stew with raisins. Speaking of crimes,
yeah,
I have a newsletter. It is about true crimes against food and otherwise. It's called Best Evidence. I co-publish it with my esteemed colleague, Eve Beatty. And you can find that every weekday going back a couple years now at bestevidence.fyi. Join us.
The stars at night are big and bright.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
It's time for the 911 Lone Star Report. I've decided that the way this is going to go from now on until I'm satisfied that they're back in form is it's going to be the 911 Lone Star Red Zone. You know, that NFL thing they had where it's just touchdowns. That's all we're doing.
Yep.
So the longer the segment is, the better this episode was. And this is going to be a short segment because there's only one thing that happened in this episode worthy of the 911's brand. And that is a scene in which two high schoolers are working at an ice cream shop. And the guy behind the cash register is basically giving people that don't respect him freebies and discounts in an attempt for them to like them, you know. So it's the sports jocks and he's the nerd behind the counter, and he gets his hand stuck in like a Dole Whip machine, like in a like a Blizzard
soft serve machine.
Yeah, soft serve machine. And it's like torquing his arm and there's a blade involved, and his coworker helps him sort of hold something while he pulls it out. And then whatever happens there, her arm then goes in. So it's a big switcheroo and it goes really in, like she's elbow deep in this thing and she can't get out. Rob Lowe et al. Come in with his perfect skin and they have to cut it open. And while
the machine,
all this is happening,
not her.
I mean,
cut her
both.
Open to get cut the machine open to get at her arm, and that was basically the one segment. And the rest of it is all interpersonal shit again. So that's all you get. So once again, I can't play the end theme because I didn't like that about Texas this week. So no. I hope the case is that these are all the result of like COVID budgets and restrictions, that they can't just do these big set pieces or they can't do as many. So that's why there's been this shift on the show from three or four great things happening in an episode down to like this week, which was one. And then the rest is all about the firefighters and 911 and blah, blah, blah. You just don't care.
Well, I'll just say the conjoined twins call, that was a great one. And you only need two actors for that one.
Yeah.
Like, figure it out. You can still have a good call without a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
Get a little more creative, 911, especially Rob Lowe's son, nepotism higher on the writing staff.
Yeah. And there was an ad during the Fox broadcast of this. I don't know if it's local or was,
it's
or
local.
If it's, well, it's a international, I mean, it's a national, lawyer office called Law Tigers.
Sure.
LawTigers.com. And I was like, what the hell is a Law Tiger? And it turns out a Law Tiger is here to protect you, the motorcyclist, against personal injury, fraudulent, blah, blah, blahs. You just got to go to the website because it is really something paired with the name Law Tigers. I really enjoyed it. LawTigers.com for
Law
all your motorcycle. Law Tigers.
Nice.
On the next Extra, Extra Hot Great, we've got Let's Watch Jerry Orbach on The Golden Girls. That is available to all our supporters at any level. Become a supporter today, patreon.com/extrahotgreat. And then right here on the next EHG Prime, it is Program EHG. You may remember about 20 years ago, we had a thing on social, pitch us an episode theme in 6 words, and somebody won.
Yep.
And it was in our back pocket until we needed it. And now we need it because next week we're going to be off. The theme is nice British people doing nice things. And that will happen with our guest, Alex Collins. She's back to help us out talking about some nice British things, plus a Canadian thing, keeping it in the Commonwealth.
Yep.
And then the week after that, we are back with Girls 5 Eva with Willa Paskin from Slate.
Yep.
Woo!
It is time for the evil, goateed, mirror universe twin of the canon, the Nonak. This is where you submit a bad episode of an otherwise good show for consideration into the Nonak. If the other one is a Hall of Fame, this is the Hall of Shame. And just a note, the audio starts a little rough on this one, but then settles down.
The episode I'm submitting to the Nonak is season 4, episode 3 of Community. A low-hanging fruit that's dangling so close to the ground that it's practically a root vegetable. This episode was chock full of Community's worst tendencies. Its inability to give its female characters anything interesting to do, its unearned self-satisfaction with its own cleverness and superiority, and its actions that really have no resemblance to genuine human behavior. It also lacks the insight into media or unexpected humor that the best episodes have. Instead, we have a bunch of random plot lines in which everyone is the Pierce, even though Pierce is barely an episode. The episode takes place at a convention for Inspector Spacetime, this universe's version of Doctor Who. But before we get there, we have to watch this interminable cutesy montage of Britta hopping around while changing into her clothes in order to hide her relationship with Troy from Ovid. As the pretext for why she's there all the time, she brings Ovid donuts, resulting in this awkward and unfunny exchange.
Hi, Ovid! Just here for my breakfast date with Troy.
Oh, good morning, Britta. I haven't seen you in over 12 hours.
Yeah.
I know you two are having sex. I've known for weeks.
What? Why didn't you say something?
I love donuts.
You know a show is running out of ideas once it starts to randomly pair off the characters. It starts out with cringy non-jokes and only gets worse from there. In this episode, Annie is really whiny and needy. And while she's always been written inconsistently, this episode feels like a real low point for her, showing Community has lost the thread on its female characters if it ever had one to begin with.
Hey, you can stay if you want.
Fine, I'll be in my room.
Good, the reservation's under my name. Enjoy the nerds.
I will! Enjoy the...
Jeff one.
I know.
Jokey fumbling for punchlines isn't nearly as funny as the writers think it is. This is also setting up a terrible plotline in which Annie pretends to be Jeff's wife for really no discernible reason. I guess it's because the writers don't know what else to do with her in this episode, just like they don't know what to do with any of the other characters. If possible, the second clip of Annie's playing house is even worse. It heavily underlines the ensuing wackiness with shenanigans music like this.
Room service.
Yes, I'd like to order some food.
And how many people will be dining today, Mrs. Winger?
Oh, I'm not... 2! Yeah, I'd like a turkey burger. And a second turkey burger, but with no bun. My husband doesn't do carbs. But he would like a scotch.
And what kind of scotch would your husband prefer?
The good kind.
I'll see what we can do.
The other half of this plot centers around another wacky sitcom concoction that bears no resemblance to human behavior and doesn't even have the decency to be entertainingly outlandish. In this plot, Jeff pretends to be the actor who plays an Inspector Spacetime villain in order to impress a woman.
Excuse me, I don't mean to bother you, but are you Nigel Cuthbertson, the actor who played Thraxus?
Call me Nige.
There's also a few tired jokes about how she must have had something wrong with her as a child if she's an attractive woman who likes nerdy entertainment. It seems like they went into a time machine from 1850 to get this joke, but apparently no one cares in the writer's room. It isn't the only borderline sexist or regressive part of this episode either. In addition to the upcoming crazy jealous girlfriend stuff with Troy and Annie's domestic fantasy, there's this recurring joke about how the fans of the show dislike the one female inspector. They always say it's not because they're sexist, but because she sucks. And the show doesn't really make it clear whether it agrees with those people or not. And while it doesn't entirely let the fans off the hook, I get the feeling that this wouldn't be so glossed over if this episode had been written after the fan outrage over the female Ghostbusters reboot and all the sexist whining about how Rey from Star Wars is Mary Sue. In Troy, Abed, and Britta's plotline, Abed makes friends with a British fan of the show, leaving Troy feeling insecure about their friendship. Britta convinces him that this guy is trying to steal his boyfriend and that Troy should confront the guy about it. Hammy shrieking like this ensues.
Oh, this is so nice. Just three friends, friending around, all unthreatened, like.
Terribly sorry. This is slightly embarrassing. I seem to have forgotten your name.
It's Troy! You know it's Troy! Okay, it's the first part of Troy and Abed. Toby and Abed in the morning? That's ridiculous! I'm not psycho!
This friend turns out to be some crazy guy who's lying about his backstory and later imprisons Abed in a telephone booth. Finally, Shirley and Pierce end up in focus testing for an American remake of the Inspector Spacetime show. It's basically a long and condescending riff on how derivative and dumbed down American television is.
You see? It's funny because it's clear.
Actually, I would like to say something. I am friends with a couple of huge Inspector Spacetime fans, and I think what they like about the show is that it's smart, complicated, and doesn't talk down to its audience. So if you'd like to make a really good American version, you should stay true to that.
Hey, instead of this constable, what about a blonde with long legs and a tennis racket?
Considering how bad this episode is, the show really isn't in a position to sneer the artlessness of its better performing competition. In the end, the episode isn't nearly as clever or insightful as it thinks it is. Troy and Abed end up okay, Annie and Jeff end up okay, and Troy and Britta end up okay. So it basically is the same ending as any other sitcom ever that they could think to make fun of. The unearned schmaltz that it ends with also isn't believable, based on how the characters have been written in the past. They're usually at least somewhat prickly and hostile towards each other, so all of the sappy hugging kind of rings false. In order to cut through this, the episode ends with a really cheap-looking gag where Kelly and Dylan from Beverly Hills act out the remake for American television. It's very bad and not as funny as it thinks it is, but I look forward to hearing if you think the same of the rest of the episode.
Thank you so much, Michaela. Jessica, please tell us what you thought of this episode and of Michaela's presentation.
Well, Michaela made a great pitch. I agree with pretty much everything she's saying here. And I was kind of waiting. I was kind of on the fence of whether I was going to vote yes or no on this. And I wanted to hear the pitch first. But she hits all the points that had come up for me. And I think in particular, the way that this episode is so far up the ass of its own mythology.
Yeah.
It's like, it's funny. Yeah, I was a Community day one watcher, and I was still watching it at this point. And they would make a little side joke about how they were watching Inspector Spacetime, and you would have 5 seconds of it, and it was funny. But now it's like, hey, guess what? We made a whole universe that's sort of like Doctor Who, but it's not Doctor Who. But we have all the details, and here's some jokes that you'll find funny if you watch Doctor Who. And for the rest of the world, it's kind of like, okay, good for you. You spent more time thinking about your extended universe than you did about any of your actual characters.
Yeah.
I will say, when I was talking to my co-host on the Fear the Walking Dead podcast last night, I said I was going to be watching a Community episode. He said, oh, is it going to be the puppets one? And I'm shocked that the puppets one is not the one that we're pitching for the Nonak. But this is pretty egregious. I hated Annie's plotline. I hated the part where they were making fun of the the female doctor slash inspector and saying that she was terrible, because I think they were trying to, the point they were trying to make is like the people that make these points are idiots, but they don't make that point strongly enough. They don't put a lampshade on it and say, oh, if you would call, if you would use this as a synonym for bitch, you would be, you know, you're a horrible sexist person. And they're like, no, everybody thinks that. And it's, you know, it might be true, it might not be true. The more I thought about it, this, and it was really kind of shooed at me all night thinking about this. I thought it's a brilliant pitch. And I definitely, these are very strong points, all of them.
Okay. Sarah.
This was a very strong pitch and an excellent presentation. But if you think I'm going to vote something into the NONAC that is slagging Doctor Who and its fans for 22 minutes, think again. Sorry. I thought that it was fairly clear that that the female inspector stuff, that they were not for it. I laughed a bunch of times. I thought the Luke Perry and Jenny Garth thing was clever. With that said, I am not and was not a regular Community watcher. And I think that there are some frustrations that had been building for people who had been watching it the whole time that I am not experiencing, because I tend to interact with it at its best. Or at least, you know, at its sort of most obviously egregious worst. This just was not sinking to the level for me. And here's a funny thing. Like, I was very interested to hear the presentation after watching this. Also, I mean, of course, we always are, but I was interested to hear the argument for loathing it, because the thing about Community in my own experience is that it's fairly stable as to like proportional elements of clever and too clever slash shitty. And as far as I could see, that's the case here. Also, like, is it as great as it thinks it is? No. Would I vote this into the canon? No. But it's no more... it's no more out of whack than a good episode would be. Like, I taught an episode of this in a college class a couple of years ago, and like, it's not that much worse or better. Like, they're not that far apart, these episodes. So I kind of feel like this is always a tough one for canon or NONAC, because like everything, it's hard for there to be like outliers with this show, because it's sort of stable in terms of when it's hilarious and when it's like being a dick, basically. The Annie Winger clingy subplot is horrible. I agree. It's dull. I just didn't pay attention to it. I was happy to see Chris Tallman. I worked with him on a pilot one time that didn't go. Hey, buddy. Randy the Bellman. It was like, I don't disagree or think Michaela is wrong. I just wasn't getting this rage from it. Like, I don't need to watch it again, but I don't think it's so bad that it should go in the NONAC. Tara.
Well, I agree with Sarah that I liked the outro with Luke Perry and Jenny Garth for reasons that would be obvious to people that are aware of Sarah's and my other work. But this was pretty bad. And to hear Michaela lay out the reasons, because I was a Community day one watcher too, like Jessica, but I was not still watching it at this point. And so I missed the coupling up phase. Like Britta and Troy. I mean, I knew that happened, but I'd certainly have never seen any episodes from that era. And it's like, yeah, this is weird. This is a weird choice.
Yeah, like, that doesn't work.
Yeah. But I know that, like, I think there's an Annie Jeff later too, right? Doesn't that also happen? I mean, it's not at this stage, but this is also weird. Like, even this like ghost of, you know, this premonition of where it's going is also bad. But even from a logic standpoint, leaving aside how bad the Annie Jeff thing is, like, how does the bellman even know who Jeff is to like bring her down there and say, look what your husband is doing? Like from a leaving aside the sexism of this, from a logic standpoint, it doesn't make sense. And getting back to the sexism, like for Britta to try to help Troy with Abed and their whole thing and framing it as like, you went all psycho girlfriend on him is like, barf. It's just gross.
True.
And I also hope that whatever Trisha Helfer is doing now, she is no longer required to do cameos in nerd adjacent stuff like this, because as soon as I heard her voice, it was like, of course it's Trisha Helfer, because like this is all she got to do circa Battlestar Galactica. And I feel bad for her because I think she's talented.
The Tasha Yar of her era.
Yeah, sorry, right. Girl. I was convinced by Michaela's presentation, but I already was like on board with this is Nonak worthy after watching it. So Dave,
it's worth noting this is from season 4, which was the Harmon-less year, and you know, for all his faults and how far he went up his own ass by the time the series wrapped up, at least he had a better bead on what he created, obviously, than people that were just shipped in to keep the show going. Yeah, this wasn't great. I think for me, for the community Nonak, I'm kind of willing to give 2. One for a gimmick episode and one for a non-gimmick episode. Because Community, for me, the worst tendency of Community was its specialty episodes. And I think this one is like halfway between a normal episode and one of their super gimmicky ones, like the puppet one or the Christmas claymation one and all these things that I'm sure they did a musical at some point.
Yes.
Probably a cartoon too. Who knows? I mean, I checked out, I think, by the time this aired. Lowest rated episodes are all from this season. So it's sort of like a universal.
Yeah.
If I'm going to then say, is this one of them that I can put it? Is this the non-gimmicky Nonak for a community? It's pretty bad. The Doctor Who stuff, either they had to do less of it or way more of it. There's something very unsatisfying about how much that convention and the idea of a Doctor Who sort of throughput plays out.
Yeah.
I just felt like I wanted more or less. It was just like very unsatisfying middle ground there. Annie, I don't know what they're doing with Annie in this episode. It is so just like random and bizarre. None of the female characters were well written on Community, but that just seemed really out of left field. One of the big reasons why this probably should be in the Nonak is that nobody orders a turkey burger in a hotel. Nobody. You're in a hotel, is free calories. Free calories in a hotel.
True. Yeah.
One positive note I will make is we talked about TV's great yellers a little while back, you know, like your Bob Odenkirks. Glover is a yeller in a different, it's more of an excited fight or flight yelling, but I really enjoy it every time that he yells. He's got a great yell, so I want to add him to that pantheon. So I'm going to say this is Nonak worthy. I reserve the right to add another Nonak for one of their puppety stupid episodes. Jessica, what say you?
I vote yay.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm not mad at how this is going, but I vote nay.
Tara?
This is yay for the Nonak for me as well.
All right, so 3-1.
This is why Sarah's not mad.
It's true.
It's Ashley.
My heart stinks.
All right. Community, season 4, episode 3, Conventions of Space and Time. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Nonak.
Ha
Oh, hi.
Oh, American love, love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
Hey, it's time for winner and loser of the week. Who has our winner?
I have our winner. It's Navally. First of all, Below Deck is getting not one, but two more spinoffs in Australia and Iceland. And the original Navally franchise, NCIS LA, has been renewed for season 13, Navally. And NCIS Hawaii has been picked up to series Navally at CBS. Navally.
Loser of the week.
Loser of the week is Saturday Night Live, which has just announced Elon Musk is going to be hosting the May 8th episode. Or will he? Because several cast members have already gone on their social media to be like, what the fuck? To date, as of this recording, those cast members include Bowen Yang, A.D. Bryant, and Andrew Dismukis. I don't know how to pronounce his name. He's new. So all of them have been like, yeah, this seems bad. So... it's not unprecedented for cast members to, you know, boycott when there's a host they do not care for. Nora Dunn famously did it when Andrew Dice Clay hosted. That was a long, long time ago. So we'll see if anyone decides to do that, if he actually does it. But yeah, yikes. SNL, Jesus Christ.
Speaking about something somebody said before we had a pee break, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
Game time.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Game Time. This is the fourth Game Time of the season. The scores currently are Tara with 2, Sarah with 1, Value Guest still looking to get on the board today. We are playing Books We've Watched from David Ellis Dickerson, who earns himself an extra credit topic. This Game Time is about books that have appeared on TV shows. In the first part, we'll be discussing books written by members of the main cast of a show. And in the second part, we'll be discussing books written by a non-main cast member that appear in significant episodes. The clues, especially in round one, are pretty good clues. So I'm giving you 3 points for an answer without it, and then 1 point with it. So here's an example. Pawnee, the greatest town in America. So name the show.
Parks and Rec.
If you didn't know that, I would tell you it was by Leslie Knope, which would have been a really good clue.
Yep.
Steel meal situation, please start.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah DeBunting has 2 steel meals. Valued guests also have 2 steel meals. I have 6 steel meals. So, Jessica, you know how steel meals work. Jump in fast and aggressive to make sure you claim your steel meal before Dave gives the correct answer.
Are we burned by guessing?
Yes.
Yes?
Okay. Yep. You can assume so unless otherwise stated. That's my policy, and I'm sticking to it.
All right.
Time for Piggy to choose who is going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. Jessica's in the hot seat. Then Sarah, then Tara. 27 questions, 1 Gross Source Equalizer Challenge Zone after round 1. Are we ready to play Books We've Watched?
Yes, sir.
All right, here we go. Jessica, the title of the book is Jack Attack, The Art of Aggression in Business.
That'd be 30 Rock.
Is it 30 Rock? It is 30 Rock by Jack Donaghy. Nice. 3 points.
Strong
Sarah DeBunting. I am now, that the number is out of the way, going to give you an extra piece of cluedness. The answers are in alphabetical order.
Ooh.
Sarah DeBunting, a person who visits a place and descent. A person who visits a place and descent. Two different books, I believe.
A person who visits a place and descent. I need a hint.
Written by Noah Soloway.
Still don't know.
That is the show, The Affair. The Affair. Yeah. Tara.
Yes.
The Man Inside Me.
That's Arrested Development.
It is Arrested Development, correct. Back to Jessica. Oh, that was Tobias, by the way.
Yes.
Written as Precinct Diary, but it was published as Blood on the Badge.
Wild guess, Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Good guess.
Yeah, good guess.
I would guess.
Written by Ron Harris, an oldie, that is Barney Miller.
Nah.
Sarah D. Bunting. Butt Loose, a piece of erotic friend fiction. Butt Loose, a piece of erotic friend fiction.
Hint.
That was written by Tina Belcher.
Bob's Burgers.
Bob's Burgers, good for one. Tara.
Yes.
Two books here.
Okay.
God Hates Us All.
Yep.
And Fucking and Punching.
I'm going to guess. Is this Californication?
It is. Hank Moody, nice. Californication. What was it connected in there?
Alphabetical, and that's what I thought the affair books was, but these are by Hank Moody, right?
Very good. Yep. Yeah. Jessica, The Subsect. The Subsect.
The Subsect.
Yes.
Give me the hint.
Jess Mariano.
I have no idea.
Jess Mariano from Gilmore Girls. Gilmore Girls.
Mm. Forgot he wrote a book.
Sarah D. Bunting, the longest title today. How I Jerked a Kidney Stone Out of a Puerto Rican Jew's Penis.
My God.
And if it helps you any, this was released as an ebook in universe. So keep in mind, alphabetical answers.
Mm-hmm. House.
House is incorrect. That was Hannah from Girls.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Christ.
Tara.
Yes.
Tapping a Maple on a Cold Vermont Morning.
Hint.
It is a short story written by Ken Cosgrove.
Oh, Mad Men.
That's from Mad Men. Good for one. Jessica. Murder Comes to Maine. Murder Comes to Maine.
All right, I'm pretty sure I know what this is, but I'm going to take the hint anyway.
Written by Jessica Fletcher.
Yeah, that's Murder, She Wrote.
Murder, She Wrote for one, gambled the 2 points away. Sarah D. Bunting, two titles here for you. Deep Six and Deep Six Rock Hollow in the series The Continuing Ventures of L.J. Tibbs. Once again, Deep Six and Deep Six Rock Hollow in the continuing adventures of L.J. Tibbs.
Hint.
Timothy McGee. That's not a real word. Timothy McGee.
That does not help.
One more hint before you
murder,
answer.
Murder, She Wrote.
These books were written in a particular style.
I don't know.
And that style is navally, because that is NCIS.
God, why?
Avenge Tara, me. You've got two books.
Okay.
Z is for Zombie.
Yep.
And The Pepperwood Chronicles.
New Girl.
New Girl is good for three.
Nice.
Jessica, The Time Hump Chronicles.
Orange is the New Black.
Yes, good for three. Sarah D. Bunting. Manhattan, and I Do I? Two different books. Manhattan, I Do I?
I mean, I don't think these were actually the titles, but fuck it. Sex in the City.
Yeah!
Correct. Tara.
Yes.
Extraordinary, My Life as Number 7.
Oh, no. Everyone's yelling at me. Hint.
Vanya Hargreaves.
No, I don't know.
That is Umbrella Academy.
Oh.
Umbrella Academy.
Okay. Well, sure. Some people are yelling at me.
Jessica. The Legends of Gremulax. The Legends of Gremulax.
Oh, now people are yelling at me now. because I can hear that. This is Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yes! 3 points.
Nice.
That was a book that taught little boys how to behave, I believe, or something like
well
that.
Well done.
Good job.
This is question 17.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
It is for Sarah. The title is Some New Beginnings. Some New Beginnings.
Kent.
Selena Meyer.
Veep.
Veep. Good for one. And the last question of round one for Tara. Mm-hmm. Congratulations, you're dying.
after Veep. God. Oh, no. Hint.
Jimmy Shive Overly.
You're the Worst.
You're the Worst is good for 1 point as we end round one. To the scores, please, Dar.
Okay. I have 11 points. Jessica just behind with 10. Sarah has 5.
All right, Sarah, guess what? You are in today's only Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. Woo! We have super old, relatively new, and 90s questions for you. Your pick.
Super old, please.
Super old. Here we go.
Thank you.
How many points does she get if she gets it? 6?
Oh, yeah. That seems... let's do 5. We'll do 5.
Good luck. Classic, what if I run Sarah? The card?
If you run the card, you get 10.
Yeah, if you run the card, you get 10. That's going to be
all
crazy.
Right.
Classics. Whose estate sued the Untouchables for $1 million for using his name for profit?
Elliot Ness.
Al Capone.
Whoa!
Wow!
That's
dicks.
Bold.
The Capone's D buddy.
Yeah, I guess.
We know where they didn't hide it. All right, sitcoms. What crack mechanic toiled at Otto's Auto Orphanage, Herb's Auto Repairs, and Bronco's Auto Repairing? What crack mechanic toiled at those three shops?
I don't know. Inspector Gadget.
That's the Fonz.
Oh, well, good for him.
Drama. What city is As the World Turns set in?
As the World Turns?
Yeah. What city?
Los Angeles.
Oakdale. Oakdale. Kids and Games. What kids' show started with tributes by Chet Huntley and Dick Van Dyke after its host died? What kids' show started with tributes from them?
Captain Kangaroo? Okay.
Walt Disney. That disqualifies you from any points, right. Unfortunately. So let's get right back into it with part two. These are written by non-main cast members, but appear in significant episodes.
Okay.
So the hints have more information in them.
Got it.
Still the same scoring.
Okay.
Jessica. The Squad. Name the show the book The Squad is from, or I'll give you the hint.
Are these in alphabetical order as well?
These are in their own alphabetical order, correct.
Okay. You don't have a bunch that start with Z.
I wish.
The Squad. Give me the hint.
It was written by Jimmy Brogan. This memoir about the tough cops of the 70s was a favorite of one of the show's main characters until he met this racist, homophobic author in person.
Is this Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
This is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, correct. That's good for one. Sarah D. Bunting. The Mystery of Alcatla.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Whoa!
Correct. Nicely done.
Very nice.
Tara.
Yes.
Here, have a rainbow.
Hint.
Oh. Written by self-help guru Dr. Honey Snow, played by Shannon Tweed, as one of this main character's one episode love interests.
I should know. It's Frasier.
That is good for one. Back to Jessica. All the president's heads.
Futurama.
Good guess, and the correct one.
Hey.
Nice.
Part of a visual gag, other books include Anti-Gravity's Rainbow, Shakespeare typed by monkeys, Volume 78, and some of the digits of pi.
Aww.
Back to Sarah. The book title is Operator's Manual, Janet. Operator's Manual, Janet.
Oh, The Good Place.
The Good Place. Good for three.
Nice.
Tara Ariana.
Yes, sir.
How to cook for 40 humans.
Oh, no. The Simpsons?
The Simpsons is correct.
Nice.
Wait, there's even more space dust on this. Your mission was to make Sarah to prepare her cry. Well, mission accomplished. All right, everybody's last question coming at you. So let's quickly get the scores, please, Tara.
Well, it's closened up. Sarah has 11 points. Jessica has 14 points. I have 15.
All right, here we go. Jessica, your book is Charlotte, Light and Dark.
That's 6 feet under.
That is, yes. 6 feet under. 3 points at the end. Here we go. Sarah D. Bunting. Chicago Mobs of the 20s.
Chicago Mobs of the 20s.
Yeah. Like, yeah, see? Yeah, bang, bang, bang.
No, yeah, like Elliot Ness. I mean, Al Capone. Yeah. Chicago Mobs of the 20s. I mean, fuck it. I don't think I can win anyway, so let's just guess The Sopranos.
Incorrect. Anybody? The author of this book, who is never named, would probably be amazed to learn that it influenced the culture of an entire planet. Famous episode.
Star Trek.
Yes.
Yep. Oh.
The last question is for Tara.
Okay.
An entire series of over 20 novels whose titles include Phantom Traveler, All Hell Breaks Loose, and Route 666.
Oh, no. I need the hint.
A series by Carver Edlin. For an entire season, the characters on this show would go to comic book stores to pick up copies of the latest book to see what was about to happen to them.
To them?
Yep.
And it's after Star Trek. I still don't know.
Anybody? That show is one of our contributors' favorites. It went on for 18,000 years. That show is Supernatural.
Oh.
And that is regulation. So, scores,
wow,
please.
Wow.
Okay. Sarah finished with 11. I have 15. Jessica's our victor with 17.
Woo. Thank you, Charlotte, Light and Dark.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I have the tiebreaker. First person to shout out the show will win a steel meal for future use. Everybody's in on this. Everybody locked in. Here we go.
Yes.
Three titles for you. Heat Wave, Naked Heat, and Heat Rises. Have you been paying attention in the past couple months to clues dropped on this show? Heat Wave, Naked Heat, Heat Rises.
Castle,
part of the Nikki Heat series, as we discussed a few episodes ago in Game Time. Correct, Tara, you get a steel meal.
I was about to get Baywatch. Thank you for preventing that from occurring.
Valued guess!
Woo! Valued guess.
Well done.
Good job.
All right, guys. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. I'm so disappointed with exposure that I shudder to make any more puns about it, so I'll just F-stop it now. We went around the dial with stops at Married at First Sight Unmatchables. Hey, speaking about unmatchable, you know who isn't unmatchable? That lady who farts all the time. She is very matchable. Offspring, Top Chef Portland, and 911 Lone Star. Communities, Conventions of Space and Time was inducted into the NONAC Week Around Winners and Losers of the Week, and Jessica, playing for value guests, was a winner of this week's Game Time from Dave.
Woo!
Next up, it's Orbach on Golden Girls, followed by a little thing about Shatner the week after. And then on the next EHG Prime, it's nice British people doing nice things. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
my farts stink.
Sarah D. Bunting.
There's 50 years of these, huh?
And Jessica Lease.
I've got the space and the time.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grit.
My heart stinks.